Okay. Thank
Just
you.
Quick roll call.
Yes, that's just going to ask you to do that. Thank you.
Sorry, thank you. Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's PPSC PDP call, we have Jeff Newman, James Bladel, Alan Greenberg, Wolf Knobben. From staff, we have Margie Milam, Marika Konings, myself, Gisela Gruber-White, and we have apologies from Marilyn Cade, David Maher, Brian Winterfeld, and Paul Diaz. If I could also just remind everyone to state their names when speaking. Thank you.
Thank you. It's November 19th, 2009. This is the work team, the policy development process work team of the PPSC. It's our first meeting after the Seoul meeting in October. And, you know, I think we have a relatively low turnout here, but I think we can still make progress and go on with some of these questions. Just to provide an update as to where we are on some of the items, first, with respect to stage, we're going to be talking about stage four today, the voting and implementation. We're going to spend most of the time on that. Before we do, an update, stage two, the draft report will be out after this call at some point today. Marika did a first draft. I kind of went through it, scrubbed it, and put in some more things. And hopefully, you know, the most important thing is to comment on that draft. It also, you'll see, it contains both stage one and stage two in the same document. We still have not really gotten too many comments on stage one, so I thought it was a good idea to put both of these stages together. It's fairly long because it contains both of the stages now, but please, that's probably one of the most important things we can do is to comment on that draft. The stage three, which we discussed the last several calls and in the face-to-face, and which there was a survey, which unfortunately there were only 8 responses, but I think the people on this call were ones that actually responded. Maybe, Marika, you can confirm that.
I think I'm still waiting for Alan to fill it in. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Alan?
then I will find it and do it. I always do it at the last moment, you know that.
And I'll send out another reminder, giving people, you know, another week, because after that it would be great if I can pull everything together and start drafting the report for stage three.
Thank you.
Right. So hopefully the report can come out in a few weeks. You know, maybe hopefully by the next call, which is scheduled for 2 weeks from today. Hopefully we can have that out. The other thing we're going to do a little bit different with respect to stage four, just to move things along, is not wait until the end of discussing stage four to do a survey, but really to do the survey kind of in parallel with discussing the issues. It may help to guide some of the discussions as well as serve as something good for the report. So that, please look for that in the next week or so as well. So just a reminder, you'll have stage two draft report today. At some point today, a couple weeks to comment on that. You'll have a stage three draft, stage three survey open for another week, plus a stage three draft report in the next couple weeks, and then in the next week or so, a stage four survey. So the other item of logistics that we should talk about is there was a doodle for a possible face-to-face meeting, and it seems like the two dates or the dates that work for most of the people that responded. Again, it wasn't everyone that responded, but the dates were January 18th and 19th, which is a Monday and a Tuesday. Probable location in D.C. just by virtue of those that responded to the doodle. Again, I think ICANN staff is still evaluating whether this is feasible and whether we can, you know, have a productive session, meaning can we make sure that we work the next few weeks and months on actually, well, the next few weeks, I should say, on getting comments to the things that we have out already, because we really only want to do the face-to-face if it's going to be productive and result in definitive outcomes and not just have it as a, you know, substitute for an ordinary conference call that we would do. With all the other work that's going on with the STI, the ICANN, the Special Trademark Interests Group, and responding to the board letter, staff is also evaluating whether to combine that with a face-to-face with the STI, if that's still what the STI wants, or whether to push out our, excuse me, our face-to-face by couple days, or I'm sorry, a couple weeks, depending on where we are in the process. Does anyone have any questions on logistics?
This is Marika. I have a question because I think neither Alan nor James actually filled in the doodle, so I just want to confirm that the potential dates of 18th and 19th of January would fit your schedule as well, so can be penciled in, and as you've been active contributors, it would be, of course, great if that date would be suitable for you, too.
I'm pretty sure they are, and I'm just in the process of filling in the doodle.
Yeah, this is James speaking, okay. And Paul Diaz and I were discussing the potential of this meeting, and I think that we discussed whether or not which of us would be representative of the of our stakeholder group, and I guess I tentatively plan to attend whenever it is. I will make the time, but I want to better understand when it will be, whether there will be funding. All of those questions I think are predicated on my attendance.
At least for some of us, the assumption is there will be full funding. If that's not the case, my availability drops a lot.
And this is Marika. We hope to be able to confirm that shortly. We need to confirm internally the exact logistics of the meeting and determine what exactly is going to be funded. But we hope to provide those details sooner rather than later. And just to confirm as well, the meeting will be open. So yes, a number of participants will be funded to attend, but it doesn't mean that, for example, if the meeting is in D.C. and I believe Paul is in that area, he can attend that meeting as well. It's not a question that we're limiting participation to one representative per constituency or stakeholder group, and we'll also be making available remote participation facilities. So for everyone that's not able to attend in person but would like to participate, that shouldn't be a deterrent. And of course, I think it's very important as well to communicate that, although the meeting is going to be intended to wrap this up, to come to agreement on the recommendations and the proposal for a new PDP, it doesn't mean that there won't be an opportunity to discuss some of those items, especially for those that weren't present, in the one or two meetings that will follow, any final report or final draft report that we will produce as a result of the face-to-face meeting. So I think that's very important as well to communicate that, to make sure that everyone feels that they can have a voice in the outcome of the meeting.
Yep. Okay. Any other questions or comments on that?
Jeff was speaking.
Absolutely. Yep.
I'm looking. I'm thinking about the entire schedule, let me say, the global schedule for the PDP group here right now is what it means. What is the target schedule, and how does it relate to the face-to-face meeting? That means for me, so for example, if you look for the Nairobi meeting, so what should be the outcome for that meeting? When do we expect? I understood from the discussion in Seoul that we are planning, let me say, to have a complete document available, not having parts of it, some stages like we are doing right now, and bring it then up to the council or to the PPSC. So that's my question. What is the horizon? What is the overall target?
I think that's a really good question, and a lot in part depends on how people participate and whether people respond. The goal I would like to see happen is that a draft report of all of the stages and the overarching issues could be presented to the PPSC as a whole in Nairobi. That's the goal. I think it's too ambitious to make a goal of getting it up to the council, but at least getting it to the PPSC or out for public comment, at that point by Nairobi would be, I'd be very happy with that.
Uh-huh. We had a side discussion in Seoul about that. So I was thinking, so whether it might be possible to split it up, let me say, to have some parts available, but that's what we discussed. diversely, let me say. So we could not agree on that. Because I understand that you are looking for to have a document as a whole at the end, you know. But
yeah.
Just would like to put that question here into that discussion, whether what would the others think about, you know, splitting up that or having one document available, a complete document, which is then going to be filed to the PPSC.
Yeah, so Marika and Alan have their hands raised. I will just say that the issue, and well, let me let Marika address that, and then Alan, and then I'll jump in after. So, Marika.
Yeah, my comment was more on the timeline, because I think the idea would be, you know, if we would have a face-to-face meeting in half January, where you know the objective is to come to agreement on the recommendations on each of these stages and the overall, you know, how the overall PDP will look, including the overarching issues for timelines and questions like translation. That on the basis of that, staff will be able to produce a final draft report, which you know would follow the model of what we have now for each stage, the discussion and each of the recommendations, but which would also include, like, basically the language, the proposed language for the bylaws relating to the PDP, and just basically like a, I don't know, it could be a kind of chart that really outlines, okay, so how does a new PDP look? And the idea would be then, of course, to have, you know, a couple of weeks probably discussion within the PDP work team to finalize that that document. And then, of course, there's as well this two-week document deadline before that the document should be shared with the community before Nairobi. So then, you know, my proposal would be that the Nairobi meeting could be used in two ways, because I guess it would probably coincide with the launch of a public comment period. So it could be a way to present these ideas to the community and explain to them, like, you know, what we would like input on, because it might be as well that maybe there are some areas where the group has different options that it wants to consider but doesn't want to take a definitive view yet, you know, following, but wants to wait for community input, for example. So it's an opportunity to provide that input and maybe also already take an opportunity to present the ideas to the PPSC so they can already start thinking about it and, you know, processing the ideas. So when it comes on their table, they've already been familiarized with it, and they might already be able to arrange some points as well for the group to consider. And on the point of splitting it up, I personally would see that as problematic, because I think the PDP is an overall process, and a lot of issues are very closely linked together, such as timing and translation. So I think it would be very difficult to present parts of it and have comments on those and not knowing what happens in the other parts, what the recommendations are for the other parts. But that's just my view. And Alan might have some more comments on that one.
Yeah, Alan?
Yeah, my comments are very brief. I think Marika has summarized most of the issues quite well. I would find it problematic to publish part of it and not all, because a lot of the things are really linked. If you think of our discussion over the last God knows how many months, you know, we've kept on referring to that. You know, one part really depends on how we decide another, and we've gone back and forth a number of times, and I would not want to see part of it without the other. I think an aggressive timeline is to get something out for comment by Nairobi. It's not clear, do we want to put it out for comment before going to the PPSC, or do we want to sort of pass it by the PPSC before we do that. I'm not quite clear on that. But regardless, I think getting anything out to discuss in Nairobi is going to be aggressive at this point.
Yeah, thanks, Alan. This is Jeff again. I agree with Alan. I agree with Marika as well about, you know, that each of these stages are related. I will say that there's possibly some things in stage five on, you know, after the fact, after a PDP, that's really to check on the progress of how an implementation went, you know, things like that. That's possible to separate that out, but I don't even think we should address that unless we have to later on. But I think in general, Alan's right that really, once you read stage one and two, you're going to see a lot of reference back from stage two to stage one. Same thing will be from three to two. There's going to be a lot of references back to stage two. And to one, and I think you're going to see that as well when we talk about these things in stage four. So, Alan, do you have another comment? Or
yeah, Yeah, no, this is another one which I should have made already. One of the things that's come up here before and is also now coming up, I think, big time in one of the STI discussions, is what do we do for review periods, for review of PDP work? We've pretty well come to the consensus operationally that PDP should have some sort of review checkpoints to see how they're working. I mean, that's been what has happened in the last few PDPs. We have never come up with a concept of what do we do if we need to make a change.
Yep.
And this is brand new. And what we've been doing to date in the PDP working group really is thinking about how well things have worked and making some changes where we think it's appropriate. In that case, it's a brand new invention. We've never had the concept. The only way we can change policy at this point is with a full PDP or board emergency action. And we've never really addressed how do we tweak things after the fact when we realize with some operational experience we didn't quite get it right.
I think the interesting thing just to add to that, Alan, is we've had some PDPs where we've built in review periods, but I don't think we've ever exercised them. The domain tasting one had we were supposed to review it after 6 months. I think it's been longer than 6 months, and I'm not sure anything's actually happened.
Well, we have gotten reports, and the results have been so good we haven't had a need to really make a change. But someday we're going to make a mistake. And we really have absolutely no process other than embarking on a brand new full PDP to tweak things. And I think we really do owe the process some real good brainstorming of how do we fix that problem without violating the concept of consensus bottom-up design.
I think that's right. What I want to do actually is not to cut this discussion off, I'll let Marika and Wolf address this, but that is stage five.
I was just pointing out why we still have some work ahead of us, not to have the discussion right now.
So let me go to Wolf, to Marika, and then Wolf, and then cut it off there and go to stage four. It also looks like some people joined Adobe. I'm not sure if they've joined the call. But, okay, so Marika.
Tatiana is on the call. I have a meeting view up, so Tatiana joined the call.
Okay.
Hello.
Okay, so Marika and then Wolf.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to comment, not per se on, like, you know, how you review outcomes of the PDP, but on the new PDP model itself, the working group work team has made some proposal in their guidelines to have some kind of system whereby the council is required to review the guidelines on a yearly basis, and if they determine that there should be any changes, that they should create an ad hoc committee that they would look at those and make those changes. And the issue is, of course, that for the working group guidelines, it's different because that's guidelines and it's not a, you know, it doesn't need to go through a vote. And yeah, so, you know, and that's something that they put on the table as well, whether there should be some kind of coherent system that would work for everything related to, you know, working groups and PDPs. There should be some kind of, you know, ad hoc or standing committee that at some point would decide, hey, we've seen many issues and people have raised issues with us. We think it's time to review now. Or, you know, whether there should be a standing review. They say, well, every year or every 2 years. So that's something for the group to consider. And, you know, I don't know the answer there either, but it's something that the other group has been thinking about as well, and that could be something that an issue that, you know, both groups might want to talk about and see if there's a model that would fit all these issues being looked at by different work teams, also on the OSC side, because they have many products as well that they're putting up. So.
Yeah. Okay, Wolf?
Yeah, well, speaking. Well, I just would like to say, not to discuss any further the split up, I am fully convinced of by your arguments, and the only thing is, well, we should have a global, let me say, timeline in scope, so that we can say to the others as well something, you know, and present something by the next time something materialized. So I got a feeling already in Seoul by some discussions, you know, people got nervous, you know, what this group is doing and what shall be the outcome and when. So that's the only thing.
This is Jeff. I think that's a good action item for us. And I think, Marika, you and I can put together a global timeline so that we can send that out. And actually, it's probably a really good idea because the council call is next week. So why don't you and I kind of put together a timeline and that could be presented to the council at their next call.
That would be great, yeah.
The call is already on Monday, so we would need to do that pretty quickly.
You and I will do well. I think you and I have talked about it, so we can pretty much just write it up and get that out. Really, Monday. Wow, today's Thursday. Yeah, that's right. Time moves pretty quick. Yeah, so we will get that out in the report. All right, let me turn to stage four, which should be up on everyone's screen right now. Talking about we're now into. So we've gotten through the whole stage of. What happens for an issues report, what happens to initiate a PDP, what happens for a charter. We've talked about everything up to when the working group is created and starts their work. We've talked about public comment periods during the working group work. Now the working group is presumably finished with its work and they're ready to present it or they're presenting it to the council. A bunch of questions came up when we initially were brainstorming as to really, what is the role? I think 1A is kind of the overall question, and the subparts are B, C, D. I see it's misnumbered. It's probably my fault there. The other parts are really subparts as to general questions. What's the role when the GNSO Council receives this report? And the first question is, does the GNSO have the discretion to pick and choose, or should they have the discretion to pick and choose which recommendations, if any, to approve? Or is the GNSO required to either adopt the whole recommendation or reject it, or can they do like a line item? Can they pick and choose certain things from the report? That's really the first question. Do people have – I see James and then Alan. James?
Hi, Jeff. Thanks. This is James. And this is interesting, touching on, the concept of line item and pocket vetoes. A little bit, but I think that the recommendation of a working group needs to go to the council, and of course that I think that it's understood that the council has the ability to then accept or reject the recommendation. But I think that the challenge is that if there's any dependencies or linkage between recommendations, such as they must be accepted or rejected as a package, I think that needs to be noted in the report. So if there's any dependencies between recommendations, that council doesn't inadvertently break those dependencies.
Okay, so I'm sorry to just question, just to clarify. So are you saying if the working group has a report and says, look, all of these things are, I'll give you an example, right? So even though this was not a PDP, but like the IRT said, this is a tapestry of solutions. Adopting one is not sufficient, that they all really are related to each other, and we've made concessions that either you adopt them all. If you don't adopt them all, then our recommendations may change. Is that kind of the thing you're talking about, that the working group should really specify?
And we see how effective that was.
Well, right.
I think turning that around to presume otherwise presents the council with somewhat of an ultimatum and binds their discretion to, give each recommendation evaluation and on its own merits. I think that if a working group were to say, look, we recommend A, B, and C, and B and C are linked so that if you were to reject one, it doesn't make sense to accept the other and vice versa, then I think that, that kind of guidance could be and should be provided to council. Otherwise, I think the default assumption is that the recommendations are independent and isolated and can be deliberated and accepted or rejected on their own. But I think that, bundling them together like that, you guys help me out. I know we've got at least one counselor here, but, that seems like a presumption of what council can and should do. I mean, we don't want it to be a rubber stamp, correct?
Right. The other argument on the other side, though, is that the working group's really the ones doing the work. The council's not as familiar with the issues, and therefore for the council to inject its own opinions into the process at this late stage may be seen as going against the whole bottom-up process, right? It may be acting more as a legislature than just policy facilitators or managers. So let me go to Alan and then Wolf.
Yeah, I think there's a few issues at play here. I mean, we don't want a situation where an overall policy is rejected because there is one aspect of it which is not palatable to a large number of the councillors or constituencies. Now, how that happened when they, in theory, were participating is an interesting question, but nevertheless. The other aspect is we're treating all outcomes of a working group the same, and I don't think we can. I think we have to look at situations where there is indeed consensus or unanimous consensus out of the working group and cases where there are strong minority reports. If council approves something with a strong minority report, it goes up to the board, and the board is then in the position of saying, who do we listen to? And the board has made it clear that they don't want to. So either council makes a decision at that point, or it remands it back to the working group with some sort of advice or goes to outside advisors. But I think the situations of something coming out of a working group with a very strong support and something with very divided support are two different situations and may be treated differently.
Okay, so let me ask on that one. So if there are a series of recommendations that have strong support, or consensus even, what do you think is the role of council at that point for those recommendations?
Are you asking me?
Yes.
I think it's accept or remand back with specific questions or targets.
Okay. Sorry, I'm just writing this down. Okay, and then what if it's got something less than strong support? Recommendations that have something less than strong support. What is the role of council?
I think ultimately council may have to make decisions at that point, or it may choose to pass it on. But since the board has indicated it doesn't want those decisions, you know, we're in a quandary. Someone along the way has to make a decision if we're going to end up with a policy. So I think there are situations where council will make decisions such as that.
Okay. Wolf, do you have any thoughts on those, or well, your hand's raised, so.
Yes. I do not have specific thoughts on situations, what happens if this case arises, this kind of recommendation, but I have a general observation regarding these questions. So that the question for me as being just a new counselor, so to find my own role, you know, on council as well, and this is reflected also in those questions. So it means what is it about in the future, the genus or council? So I, from my understanding, it is okay. A kind of hierarchy. That means, so there will be some working teams, working groups, which are going to be set up by the council. On the they report to the council, they bring up some recommendations, and from that point of view, I would really see that the council is in the position well to alter and to amend and to, let me say, to comment on those recommendations in that sense that the council could find an agreement on those recommendations. So that's my first point. So so that means that we on council as well, we have to find a kind of model how to cooperate with the working groups, that means in between, until they come up with recommendations. It doesn't mean that the council has only to set up a working team and then to lean back and wait what shall be the outcome and then just start to comment. He has to accompany, the councils have to really to accompany the entire process, what's going on in the working group, so that at the end, that would be ideal, recommendations could come up which are agreeable really. That's what I see, let me say, as optimal. So I don't know whether it could happen, but it depends on the kind of cooperation the council is going to set up in the future with the working teams. So and therefore I think we also on councilor we have to discuss those questions in advance when we are going to prioritize our work and when we are going to set up working teams. I don't have any comments to a specific those questions, but just in general.
Okay. Well, let me ask another question that may or may not change things, and then I'll go to Alan. If you think about the composition of a working group, right, we don't require that a working group has members of every constituency, every stakeholder group. It may, and it's certainly encouraged. We don't require it, nor do we require that it's the same number of people from each of those constituencies working group. So, for example, like Alan can tell you firsthand, you have a working group that's comprised a lot of registrars of one group. So the council, so the question that Alan had raised initially is, well, in theory, the working group should not have come out with how it got to a stage where councilors disagree, maybe a little bit of a mystery since, you know, went through the whole process. But the reality is the working group may not necessarily reflect a balanced opinion as would be on the council. Does that change anyone's view of things, or does that have any effect? And Alan, I don't know if you want to answer that or something else, but...
Well, I was going to say something very similar, that theories are very nice. The reality is that working groups are not balanced. They may have a very large proponent of from one side or another. Now, since the working group doesn't vote in absolute numbers, if you know, as the example you gave, if the registrars are all against something, it may make it very hard for the working group to come out with that, even though they are just one of the components. Now, in theory, everybody should be participating. The reality is, due to schedules and relative priorities and things like that, it doesn't always work out that way. Ultimately, council has a responsibility of coming out with good policy. And regardless of whether we follow the process or not, if there is a judgment that the policy is not a good policy, council should not be passing it on simply because the process has been followed. And I think ultimately that's the test of the rules we put forward, is are we having a high degree of assurance that council is going to come up with good policy? A PDP can go on for years. The situation may well have changed, which drove you to initiate the PDP. The working group should be nimble enough to take that into account along the way, but ultimately it's council's decision. I think council needs a fair amount of discretion at that point to at least remand, if not make changes.
Okay. Let me go to Marika.
Yes, following on Jeff's comments on that the spread of a working group might be different and not necessarily representative of the council. I mean, of course, one challenge there is that, you know, one of the aims of the CNSO improvement and the restructuring is to have the council more as a manager and not as a policymaker or a developer of policy. The challenge is, of course, if you go too much down that line and saying, oh, well, you know, if the working group is not representative, the council can just, you know, redo it again or just change things. You know, you might take away as well incentive for people to participate at the working group level. I don't know necessarily, you know, an answer to how to avoid it and make sure that you have participation and that when the working group comes with a recommendations, those are, you know, representative of the community. Because otherwise I fear that you might go back to a situation where you have, you know, no representation, no participation from certain groups, and once it gets to the council, they suddenly start making changes or discussing things which, you know, where the working group probably would have been the place to actually do that. So...
Let me. I think that's a really good point. And let me take Alan's proposal because it was kind of a concrete one, which we could take in two parts. And then I want to hear what James thinks and others, and I can give my opinion too, I guess, if people care. But let's say something does have strong support or consensus. I think Alan's proposal on the table was that if there are recommendations coming out of a working group that have strong support or consensus, that the only role for a council at that point is either to accept it as a whole, reject it as a whole, or remand it back with specific instructions as to, you know, what it could do to move that issue forward. Alan, did I kind of phrase that correctly?
Yeah, but it assumes something I didn't say, but I think is important, that it assumes strong cross-constituency support. That is, a working group which was not balanced enough could end up with a very strong statement which is not supported by all groups on council.
Yeah.
So I think it has to factor, that part has to be factored in.
So let me, sorry, this is a sub-issue related, is Marika, has the working group work team yet addressed the issue of what constitutes strong support versus what constitutes consensus versus rough consensus and the other terms?
Yes, but now listening to the discussion, I'm realizing as well that indeed they haven't really discussed, like, okay, but how do you factor in, or how do you measure, or how do you, you know, show if, you know, consensus means that, you know, was 99% of only registrars on the call and 1% that disagree was, you know, someone else. They haven't really spoken about that, and I think we haven't spoken about that either in, you know, the outputs of the working group, whether, you know, maybe we should pay some attention there as well, like, because they define indeed the consensus levels, but maybe we should, you know, think about or maybe talk to them as well, and how you factor in if indeed certain recommendations, you know, yes, there's consensus, but the group is completely unbalanced. I mean, there is a provision or, you know, the working group guidelines do indicate, like, if the chair really feels that, you know, there's no real representation or disproportionate representation of some groups, that he or she should go back to the council and say, hey, you know, we really should get some more members from different parts. So there is some kind of, you know, safeguard there, but still you cannot force people to participate and show up.
Well, and it's hard to dissuade the group that has a lot to lose based on the output of a PDP not to participate in large numbers. I mean,
I think,
no, in government, who lobbies for a change or against the change? Those who are most involved.
Well, let's for purposes of this discussion and to move it forward, Marika, if you could add that to the agenda item of the working group work team, and I think implicitly what we should define as strong supporter consensus is from the stakeholder groups and constituencies as a whole, right, from the same groups that will be represented on the council.
Well, it does go, of course, back to one thing as well, like, you know, is everyone equal in the working group, or are there some more equal than others? Is it because, you know, someone is representing a stakeholder group or constituency, does their view have more weight or not? I mean, the same question has been discussed as well, and I think we discussed here as well on, you know, constituency statements versus public comments. How, you know, I guess in the end it's as well the chair's duty maybe to weigh that to a certain extent and saying, well, you know, we have here a whole constituency voting yes, and we have one individual not representing anyone saying no. How do you go about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, as a contracted party, there are definitions in the registry agreements, probably the registrar agreements. Well, the registrars actually are probably more numerically defined as opposed to principally defined, that it has to be consensus of Internet stakeholders as opposed to just the consensus of those participating in the working group.
Which is why council is by definition, balanced across the stakeholder groups and constituencies, and a working group is not.
Right. But the question, I guess, still remains, though, it would worry me as a contracted party to just let the council substitute its own judgment in for things that a working group has worked on, as opposed to, so let's say there's a strong recommendation or consensus out of the working group that of certain recommendations. council should at that point say yes, either yes, we accept it, and the council as a whole votes to accept it, or rejects it, or sends it back and says, look, even though there's strong support, we don't think you really got the input of the intellectual property owners, for example, so we want to send it back, to remand it back to the working group to make sure you take into account that that viewpoint, as opposed to just basically changing the recommendations on the fly within the council. And that should be, I would think, one basis for the council to send it back. But Alan, I don't know if that's a newly raised hand or...
It's a new. I had lowered it and then raised it again.
Okay, so Alan.
Yeah. I'm just as uncomfortable with you are with the council making policy, although the council still tends to want to wordsmith documents and make substantive changes at the very last moment by changing words. But I'll use the perhaps worst possible example of who is. And I think council needs the flexibility of taking reasonable action. Now, whether that is remand back to a work group or create yet another work group or a different process to try to address something where there is not a consensus and a simple answer, I don't think we can tie council's hands to a large extent there.
Well, I think what you're saying, though, is something different than complete flexibility to rewrite provisions. In other words, what you said, what I heard, which I think is fine from my own personal viewpoint, is if council doesn't like a recommendation and they don't feel like the working group got it right, they can send it back or they can send it to another group, but they really shouldn't be rewriting it on their own. That's not why they're there.
That's not right? Why they're there, but isn't that similar to a discussion one can have about the board? That the board should not be making operational decisions, but there are times when we have to come to closure and the board does make decisions. And I'm not sure council is a lot different. So I'm not sure I'd want to see an absolute law about how something is handled. Council in the past has voted to accept or reject PDPs en masse, and they've done it section by section, for instance. I think the GTLD one was done section by section. And that allows council to give advice to the board at a more discrete level. Now, should council be allowed to make an arbitrary change? I can imagine situations where the council, puts together a quick working group, a balanced working group at the end to decide should it be A or B, and comes up with something that everyone can live with. We do that in crafting motions all the time. The RA would not have been approved had there not been that level of activity. And I'm not sure we want to preclude it in this kind of situation.
But I've talked
enough.
Yeah, okay. But just to stress that even then it wasn't council on its own that was rewriting it. Council set up some process to deal with it that actually could take input from other parties. It wasn't just at a council meeting that a council raised their hand and said, the recommendation, I know it had strong support, the recommendation was for A, B, C, and D. I now want to change A so that it's now something completely different. How does the rest of the council feel? And then the council passes something that doesn't look like what A initially looked like.
But what really happens is there are backroom conversations and conversations over a drink, and we end up coming up with something that everyone can accept. I mean, that's how governments work, too, or international, even between governments. I think ultimately, if we have a difficult situation, the simpler and more agreeable output of the GNSO is better than following procedure strictly and presenting something to the board, which the board then has to do that same work on. So I look for ultimate flexibility, but specifying what we consider the norm to be.
Yeah, I guess for a consensus policy especially, one that would bind registries and registrars, unless the registries and registrars voluntarily agreed to this change,
But there is a vote. Ultimately, there's a vote.
Yeah,
And the voting thresholds clearly allow a policy to be changed against the party that will have to implement it without their approval. That's the nature of the thresholds that we've come up with. It's not preferable, but it's often what happens.
Yeah, I just in the registry constituency, we don't elect our councillors to do that. In fact, if they do that, they get removed.
Say that again.
We do not elect our councillors in the registry constituency to make backroom deals without consulting with the entire constituency as a whole.
Oh, presumably before you vote, you will consult whether they agree with the result or not.
Not if things happen over drinks at an ICANN meeting in between the times where the stakeholder group meets and the council meets. I mean, James, do you have any thoughts on this? You want to? Yes, you do. Good. James?
Yeah, I had my hand up because I'm listening to this, and I need to qualify this statement with an apology that I haven't been around the process all that long, and probably this is my fourth or fifth or sixth PDP, but it certainly seems that we have a legitimate and justifiable reason why a decision should not be made at every level, okay? Working groups are unbalanced and unrepresentative. Council should be more of a manager of the process and less of a deliberative and legislative body, and then, of course, the board doesn't want to appear to be a top-down creator policy. So it seems like we've got a really good reason why we shouldn't ever have any decisions made at any point of the chain.
I'll vote for that.
So I wanted to step back a little bit and say if the question is, you know, and I'm probably not, don't have the, you know, international government background to, you know, weigh in on this outside of the U.S., but I'm thinking of just how different subcommittees of Congress would work and taking a look at that as a model. I mean, at some point, decision and accountability has to be, enforced at some level, and you think that, well, if the working groups are unbalanced, then maybe, you know, that's a requirement, Alan. Maybe we recommend to the PDP working group team that they take a look at this issue of establishing minimum thresholds by which a working group would qualify as a balanced working group and therefore, you know, able to make some sort of recommendation. And then, you know, that can be factored into whether or not the council has the latitude to accept or reject a recommendation out of a working group based on whether or not it met that that requirement for balance. But I'm listening to this, and I'm agreeing with everything you're saying. I have no reason not to, but I'm also kind of shaking my head a little bit at how do you, you know, untangle this. So,
how do you eventually come up with policy and preferably good policy?
Right, because what I see, and it's like, Alan, I think you alluded to it, is what I see is people looking for end-arounds to the process, okay? They're looking at, well, instead of a consensus policy, let's go, you know, overload the RAA or other agreements, or let's have a few drinks with a few people, you know, at an ICANN meeting, and, you know, we'll get 90% of the work done in the lounge as opposed to, you know, when the translators and recorders and transcription is running. So I think that, you know, people are looking for, you know, well-intentioned people are looking for ways around these roadblocks, and they're finding them in these other alternative areas, which somewhat undermines the legitimacy of the process we're trying to fix.
I think, James, you're right in the sense that there's a lot of going around either from every angle, right? Registries can propose new registry services to actually get around it if they don't like it. The WIPO can propose a new, you know, its own changes to the UDRP if they don't like the way something's coming out. We've seen, informal working groups forming to try to, you know, for an expressions of interest policy. So
right.
All these types of end-arounds of the policy process are going on, and I think the reason it's going on is because, you know, they don't want to participate, or they don't think that the policy process is working for them and for their particular interests.
Right, and there's a lack of confidence in what, you know, will come out of that if the prescribed process were followed.
Right. So, Alan, do you have a comment?
I disagree strongly with a lot of the tone of what was just being said. I think the discussions over a drink and the informal groups that form periodically are not end-arounds. I think that that is often where the constructive, innovative thinking and compromise comes from, not necessarily in the formal meetings. And I think to pretend that those are purely used to bypass the process as opposed to augment and support the process is pretending that our formal processes are a lot more perfect than they are. I mean, I see very often that's where the compromise and the innovation comes from, not necessarily in the formal meetings.
Okay, James?
Yeah, just real quickly, I agree with you, Alan. A lot of good things come out of those types of meetings and activities, but so long as they are fed back into the formal process, but, oftentimes they... You know, they aren't, and who's monitoring that they are or they aren't. That informal group that convenes in a lounge isn't an ad hoc decision making body. So, I mean, I think that there's a balance that we're looking for.
Yeah, I mean, I look at what happened in domain tasting, and I don't think we would have come to closure with a satisfactory answer if we hadn't had backroom discussions going on in parallel with the formal ones.
Yeah, but did you then bring that, bring that conversation back to the PVP, or
what? Yeah. It wasn't brought back as a result of this private conversation that we're not talking about. But yes, it worked its way back into the PVP. Of course, there was a huge overlap in the people.
Right, that's true too. And I think in that circumstance, there were certain factions that were trying to block it. And so what some of the registries, and I'll be up and own honest about it, I was part of that Birds of a Feather group, and we got frustrated that it wasn't moving in the policy process, so we proposed it as a registry service, and we implemented it. And once we proposed it and it got through the registry services process, we then introduced it as part of the PDP process that was going on, and that helped move it along. But in the end, James, it did go back. I think that's the point, Alan, that we're trying to make, that it could be very beneficial and it could be great innovative ideas, but it has to go back through the process.
But look at the decision which yielded getting the council to approve the RAA amendments. There was a belief among some of the councillors that this was a bad thing. And it took a lot of private discussions and a little bit of haggling with the wording to get everyone to approve it, and it was approved unanimously. And I don't think there's many people around the table who think it was a bad thing.
But
it's not clear it would have come out of another formal process.
Yeah, I think that was a little bit different, too, in that the RAA specifically call on a vote of the council as opposed to a PDP process.
No, but I'm giving the example of how things change because of these kind of processes. I'm not using that as the model.
Okay. So where are we on this? So let's see. I'm trying to figure out, Alan, where we are, because I like the way...
we're still on the first point.
but I think this relates to all the questions in one, to be honest, right? With the exception of time periods. I really do think that I liked where you were going at the beginning of, council really, if something's got strong support or consensus within a working group and the working group is balanced, or even if it's not balanced, that the council really may be restricted in either approving the recommendation, but it can go recommendation by recommendation, approving it, rejecting it, or sending it back, but rewriting it as a council.
I would be wider than sending it back, either remanding it back to that work group or to another deliberative process.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough, right, with specific instructions as to
yes.
why it's remanding it back.
Exactly.
Right. So do we have anyone disagree with that point? Again, this is if there's strong support or consensus within a group. Okay, so Marika, you've got that down. I think that's moving forward. The second point is if something's got something, if a group's got recommendations that have something less than a strong support or consensus, what happens with those recommendations? And what I'm hearing is flexibility. Alan has proposed flexibility. I'm still not personally comfortable with that much flexibility in the sense if a working group's not able to work out and get strong support, I'm not sure the counselors, again, should substitute their own opinion. It may be an acceptable outcome to not have an outcome. In other words, it may be acceptable to just say, hey, look, this is not resolved. Either we send it back or we just kill it for now.
Or take some for the other further action.
Meaning what?
Well, I hate to use who is as an example, but it's one that has gone through a number of processes, is still not resolved, and council still has active things on the books.
Okay, but still kind of, I guess, the same prospect of it could either. It could remand it to another working group, the same working group, to try to figure out, or it could just say, you know what, we've tried, let's move on and not address it.
Remember,
the question is, can the council, what's that?
Just as a follow-on on that quickly, remember, council did take a vote on some blended results. They just failed on who is. Now, I don't know if we want to repeat that, but, you know, There was actually some votes that council took on who is, which failed, which is why it's still an open issue. Okay, I've spoken enough.
All right, James?
Margie's ahead of me in the queue, by the way.
Okay, sorry, I just looked up now. So, Margie?
Yeah, I mean, on the issue of whether there isn't enough consensus, I mean, I think what you guys are talking about is in the restructuring, we're trying to move the council from being a decision maker more to being a manager of the process. And so where there are gaps, at least this is kind of my perspective thinking about this, where it looks like there's a lack of consensus, maybe because there's imbalance or something like that, but I think it's, you know, appropriate to have the council come up with a, you know, clarification of the procedure. So it's more, this is just a suggestion, that it's more coming up with, okay, this is the additional process we'll use to come up with consensus, as opposed to having the counselors haggle out the, you know, what is the right answer. I think that's a little different from what Alan was saying and more of what, like, Jeff was saying.
Okay. James, on that?
Yeah, that's a good point, Margie, and I think that just going back a little bit, the recipe, so drawing on my background as a software developer, that the idea that a council could send back recommendations to the same group without any additional guidance, to me, is the recipe for an infinite loop, right? It'll just essentially boomerang back and forth between those two groups. But I think that Jeff made a good point earlier, which is that when you said if the if the working group reaches a strong consensus and it is balanced, and if it is not, is no outcome an acceptable outcome? And I think that's an interesting point, because what it says, in effect, is that the status quo prevails unless and until a balanced working group can reach strong consensus. And I think that's an incentive to, an incentive to encouraging consensus. I think it's an incentive to broader participation and representation in these working groups, so that you don't have one or two stakeholder groups kind of carrying the load and coming up with things that are unpalatable to other groups that didn't participate in the process. So I think that, going back to what you said, Jeff, is that, we should say something to the effect of the status quo prevails until those thresholds can be met. And if they are met, then I think that the council's actions are very clear. They simply have to look at what's coming out with strong or unanimous consensus from a balanced working group and accept it.
Okay, Alan?
Yeah, I think we want to be careful about using the term working group, which is now a defined term. If I look at the two examples where the board has remanded things back to the GNSO, which the GNSO has not been able to just come to closure on, and that's the restructuring of the GNSO and now the STI things, which I may be a Pollyanna, but looks like we may come to closure on. In both cases, the GNSO ended up either being told to or on its own created a balanced non-working group, you know, something, a working group not called a working group, which may be able to, under pressure, come to a decision, whereas the formal WG structure in ICANN cannot do that. So I think we need the ability of council to take actions which would result in good policy outside of the formal working group process if necessary, which is why I don't want to bind it.
I
don't disagree that
I think good policy, that term is in the eye of the beholder,
indeed, but bad policy is often generally agreed upon.
Well, that's true.
A lot of profound statements here. James, you got another comment?
No, that was. I was checking my hand to bring it down.
Okay. I think we've spent a good amount of time. We have some notes on it. Let me go to 1G, which there's two of them, apparently. The first one, which I would think is probably a pretty obvious one that we could probably support, but says, should there be an opportunity for the working group to meet with the council to present its report and allow for a dialogue and Q&A? Does anyone think this is a controversial one? Does anyone disagree that that should be allowed? Or does everyone think it... Let me ask. Okay, Marika, yes.
This is Marika. I'm definitely not disagreeing, but just talking about current practice, it's either sometimes it's staff, sometimes it might be the chair, or sometimes it might be the council liaison that might present the recommendations from the working group. But what I've noticed is that there's very little discussion or dialogue. I mean, it might be that, some council members, of course, hear it for the first time, haven't had a chance yet to maybe review the report or think about the recommendations. So I'm just wondering if there should be an opportunity to have a more in-depth discussion on the report and for the council to be able to ask questions, and that might help as well avoiding where, they might debate on whether certain recommendations yes or no, and they have an opportunity to actually ask questions on, why did you recommend this, and why didn't you take that into account? And I don't know. I wonder if there's some kind of structure you can find that to have a more in-depth discussion once a working group produces its report and has made its recommendation. Because what often happens in practice, it seems, is that the recommendation are just taken over and placed it into a motion, and that's it.
So just to add to that, and then I'll go to Alan. This has been, by the way, one of the biggest frustrations, not necessarily at the council level, but at the board level, is that there's never an opportunity for the board to talk to the counselors or to talk to a working group or anyone once something gets forwarded to the board. It's really, and this will come up later in another question, but staff produces a report, the staff report, which is never made public, the staff report, which is never subject to any public comment. That's all that goes to the board. I mean, maybe the report is usually attached to the back of it, so a working group report, but there's no check and balance to make sure that the staff got it right, or there's no opportunity for anybody for the board to question. So now you're talking about two levels removed, right? The council, there's never dialogue or opportunity for the working group to meet with the council, and then there's not opportunity at the board level for the board to question. So this has kind of been one of the things that I've, in other circumstances, have championed, the fact of the group that's making the decision should have at its disposal the group that came up with the recommendation. I think in general, I think that is a good idea. But Alan, let me...
I support what you and Marika are saying 100%. I'm not sure the logistics will ever work out. I mean, if you look at the similar thing with relation to the board, the only time we ever really have those substantive discussions is after the whole thing is blown up, and then we decide to take the time to talk. We never do it on a routine matter because there's not enough time to do that, and the logistics are too hard to get the same people in the same room at the same time. And I suspect that would be a very similar case between council and working groups. I mean, we can invite all the people to the 10 minutes in the council meeting when we have the discussion, but there's not going to be enough time for any real interaction or discussion at that point. And devoting a whole meeting to it is something we just don't take the time to do. So I support the concept. The logistics boggle the mind.
Okay, but I think we can make the recommendation and then have the council figure out
sure.
how to do it, right? I mean, I think it can be done. It hasn't been done, but I do think it can be done, even if it's at a meeting, even if it's at, an ICAM meeting itself,
yeah.
or if it's during a call. Even it doesn't necessarily have to be the whole working group. It could be representatives of the working group that are there. But at least a recommendation to allow for a dialogue should probably come out of our group.
Certainly in cases where it is clear there is no universal agreement in the working group, it would be nice to be able to expose the issues to the next level up, yes.
But it would also be nice if the council were to ask questions on a report or issues that discussed on the council list, that those could be presented to the working group to provide answers. It doesn't all have to be in person, I guess. It could be over email. I think one of the problems with the council list, I raise this to Avery, I'll raise it again to Chuck at least several times a year, is to have some mailing list that's moderated in a respect, but that allows for people to have direct conversations with counselors.
Yep.
So the next question is, what time periods does the council need? What are the time periods in which the council needs to complete its work? So the working groups presented its report to the board. What is the time period with some flexibility and all the rules we've kind of talked about with respect to time frames? What is everyone's general thought on how soon should the council be required to act? Should it be the same as we kind of came up with issues reports, where it was that the council should address in some manner, either accept, approve, or defer at the first meeting following release of the issues report, unless that falls within 7 days, giving, of course, any constituency stakeholder group the right to defer for one meeting? Should we just apply the same rule for consistency?
From the point of view of drafting, I certainly would, and then see how it fits when we look at the whole thing. I have no problem with that.
Okay. Marika, I guess for the report, we'll just keep the same time frame and see how that goes across.
Okay.
And I wrote that up in the stage 2 one. Hopefully. Hopefully it came out right. Okay, public comment period. So the working groups presented its report to the council. Should the council have another round of public comments on the final report? Now, there have not been comments to the final report at this stage, right? There were comments on the initial report, maybe multiple comments. But then, ultimately, there's a final report. The final report's presented to the council. At that point in time, there's been no or there is no requirement for a public comment period. Do people here think there should be? Again, this is on the final report. Alan?
Doesn't it really matter, depending on whether there's been substantive change or not? I mean, you can imagine cases where it's virtually... they corrected 3 typos, and other cases where the whole thing has been turned on its head.
So
certainly those are different cases.
So perhaps there's a recommendation that the council may initiate a that maybe the working group should maybe have a recommendation in their final report as to whether they believe their report's changed enough to have a public comment period. Maybe that's something that could come from a working group. But there should be flexibility for the council to have a public comment period if the final report contains substantial differences to the other reports that have gone out for public comment.
Yeah. Remember, the working group has the ability of saying, we've made a whole bunch of changes, let's put it up for comment before we submit it to council. So the working group could have initiated that on its own. I don't think there's anything prohibiting it.
Okay.
Now, if, you know, the question is, should it have done that and it didn't, does council have the right to do it? I would think council has an obligation to do it. If there have been substantive changes.
If there have been substantive changes to a to the recommendations between, and those substantive changes have not gone out for public comment in any prior period, that the council should, it's a recommendation from this group that the council should put that out.
It's a judgment.
Have the option to put it out for public comment.
Yeah.
Anyone disagree with that? Nope. Marika, did you capture that?
Yes, I did.
And then the question is, okay, now there's a public comment period. What do you do with it? Who incorporates it? The working group? Do they, are they still around? Does the council do it?
Maybe we want to retract our last decision.
So I think what we said is probably sounds substantively right, but then what do you do? So, Marika, were you going to say something or?
Yeah, no, I was going to say if indeed the working group would, you know, if you would, I mean, it's a recommendation. Of course, you could build in you know any PDP guidelines that we would produce, saying, well, if the initial report has substantial changes, you might want to consider. Oh, are you still there?
I'm here.
There we go.
That was interesting.
I think we were being put on hold. What was I saying? So maybe a recommendation could be to the working group, like if you decide to have if there's substantial changes between the initial report and your almost final report, you might want to consider running a public comment period. So then it would be the obligation for the working group to incorporate any changes to their final report at that stage. Alternatively, if the council runs it, you might just, you know, what staff does, recommend staff to do an analysis and summary. And, you know, the council can review then those comments in combination with the report. But then you come back to the point, like, can they then make decisions based on those public comments to change any of the recommendations? Or if, based on those public comments, they feel there should be changes, they then give it back again to the working group?
So I agree with everything you said up until the point of the last point, I think, which we need to discuss, because that seems to make sense, that if the council puts something out for comment, it really should be summarized and gathered by the staff. I think your last question is something we should talk about. So what happens if that results in changes? Alan, any thoughts on that?
Well, if council, if we want to essentially eliminate the opportunity of council to make the decision or recognize whether the comments are substantive enough to warrant a change, then it's got to be back to the remand or create a new group.
I think that makes sense.
Now we have a decision that council's going to have to make is, was this substantive enough to require that? I mean, we're talking about judgment calls all along the way.
Yeah, but I think as the managers of policy, I think that is okay.
Sure.
Then make that call.
Yeah, I have no problem with that. I'm just pointing out that it is a judgment call that will have to be made in that process.
Okay, So that sounds like we have a place to go with that. And the final question on this one is that should there be an opportunity for other third parties to provide the council with an opinion or view before it takes a decision on the recommendation? So let's say there's a working group recommendation, it goes to the board, to the council, or let's say the ESAC has its own view, has read it and said, well, wait a minute, we have some comments. Should they have the opportunity, or should they have participated in the regular public comment period?
I think we had word somewhere that there should be explicit invitations to respond during some of the comment periods, which go out to the various ICANN bodies.
Yeah, so
I don't remember where that was, but I remember talking about it.
Yes, you'll see that in the draft 2 report.
Yeah.
And I think that's right. So maybe my example was maybe it's the anti-phishing working group, or maybe it's someone else that's not a formal advisory committee or supporting organization.
Well, I mean, look, when something's going in the process we're defining here, when something's going to the final comment period before it goes to council, it is essentially cast in concrete. And if someone objects, they should be saying so.
James?
Yeah, I'm just not clear as to why the public comments weren't utilized for this input in this scenario.
Yeah, I think that's part of the question, James. I mean, the answer to this question could be no, they should not have the opportunity. They've had the opportunity on multiple occasions. We just wanted to introduce the question just to see if it had a different answer. What I'm hearing...
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I understood it, but it sounds like that then my preference would be that, it sounds like they've had an abundance of opportunity prior to this point.
Right, and presumably once it goes to the board, they'll have that opportunity as well.
Okay. Right. Great.
Okay, so maybe in the last few minutes, maybe we can ask the question on number 3, which I think is not that difficult of a question. Not necessarily are the current bylaws the right ones, but maybe 3B, which we kind of talked about already in the council, but 3B is, right now what happens is there's a board report that's created that the council well, maybe it's not as easy as I thought it was. Let me break it down in general, because I think there's a sub-question as to what goes into the council report to the board. That's the first question. And then the second question is, right now what happens is staff usually writes a report above and beyond what goes in the council report, and that goes to the board. And oftentimes the feedback I've gotten from board members is that that's really all that they have time to read, which is what concerns me a little bit. So maybe I save that for the next discussion because I think it's more substantive than we thought it might have been.
Yeah.
So I think we had a good, even though there's a few of us on here, I think we made some good progress. What I also want to do is kind of throw in the survey, we're going to get some of these questions out there too so we can move a little bit faster on these. We also, Marika, probably need to fix the numbering on some of these.
I will.
You don't think 3-1-G's are good?
I just accepted your changes and then realized that I had changed some numbers. So
I didn't even bother looking at numbering. But I think we've made some good progress. The next call is scheduled for 2 weeks from today, same time. And in the meantime, you'll see a stage one/stage two report that comes out. Stage one hasn't changed from what it was the last time we put it out. Now it's just combined into 1 and 2. A survey for stage 3 for Alan, a survey for stage 4 for everyone. And did I miss anything? Oh, and a stage 3 draft report that hopefully will be out around the time of the next meeting. Any other questions? Comments?
Good meeting.
All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good morning.
Thanks.
Thank you.